When Tommy Castellano said Florida State had weapons in 2025, Michael, are we bringing a knife to a gunfight, or do we have some legitimate pieces that could make Florida State surprise some folks in 2025? Well, I did some digging, and we got some impact player watch list stuff that we're going to talk about today that I think you guys are going to find interesting. I'm telling you, Michael, I think if some of these things hit, you know, we talk a lot about potential versus production. If some of these pieces hit, man, I think Florida State could surprise some people. I think some people might be sleeping on some of the pieces that Florida State has. So, man, a lot to talk about this. We got ACC Media Days coming up. The Florida State-Alabama game is sold out. We're going to talk about all that coming up in this episode. So, man, excited for this one. As it's that time, Michael. We're getting closer to the season. I'm, you know, I always make this joke like a bug to a bug zapper, man. I am sucked back in and ready to go. I've been watching The Climb. You got Media Days coming up, man. I'm back on the train. I'm ready for Florida State football in 2025. And man, just excited to get into this one. So thanks for joining me. And how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Jesse. Good to be here. Yeah, in December, I was done. I was ready to just be done with football, college football, with Florida State, all of that stuff. Here we are, literally a few weeks from Media Days and the season opening in Alabama, and I am juiced. I am ready. I'm believing all the conspiracy theories about Florida State winning a national title. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm believing good things are coming, so I'm ready. Let's get into it. Let's talk about what Florida State could look like in 2025. Let's go.
I'm ready to start swag surfing in the stands again. Okay, just kidding about that.
No, let's not do that.
But no, man, and I think that's how it should be. You know, like really, if you're a Florida State fan and you love this team and you love this program, like no matter what the expectations are, I think you should take each season as its own and you should be excited for that. And so I'm definitely excited. You know, we're only a couple weeks away from where I usually get into my preseason routine of like just walking around the house, randomly playing the war chant on my phone, getting pumped up, getting excited. So I'm ready for it. But, you know, we hinted at ACC Media Days. And so that's the first thing we're going to talk about here because it is coming up very shortly. Florida State, I believe around a week from now, around 12 days or so, Florida State will be taking the stage in Charlotte. And of course, as you guys know, your guys from Plant the Spear will be there bringing you coverage throughout the entire event. We're going to be talking with Mike Norvell. We're going to be talking about talking with the selections that they just named yesterday from the player standpoint, which is going to be quarterback Tommy Castellanos, Daryl Jackson Jr., Richie Leonard, and then Earl Little Jr. So, man, we got a pretty good lineup there. Excited to talk with all these guys. Excited. This is, you know, this. When you talk about Media Days, and I know we don't love the ACC, but I'm grateful for them allowing us the opportunity to be there because for most of the big media outlets, this is just another day at the office for them. But for us, the small independent sites, like this is our one opportunity to be able to get media credentials to really live out the dream, man. And so this is one of the weeks that I look forward to most throughout the year from a standpoint of doing Plant the Spear. And so, man, it's just like when you get back in and you get around all the coaches and the players and things like that, man, it gets you excited. But I'm so excited for Media Days. I'm so excited that this year I will have Michael with me here.
Yeah.
So we're going to be able to double the coverage that we're going to be able to do from previous years. And, you know, funny story, Michael, for those of you watching that don't know this, you joined me for Virginia Tech in 2023. And we have been recording for now for about 2.5 years. We've only met in person twice. Like, what? It's crazy through the power of the internet. So, like, I'm excited. You know, we're excited just to be able to hang out again. And then, you know, again, man, Media Days is so much fun. So I'm looking forward to it. I think we got a good lineup. I think it's interesting. Some of the names that we'll talk about here in a minute that got chosen there. Earl Little's one that stood out. We were talking about this before the show. Is that saying something about Earl Little? Is this where he's going to be, you know, maybe stepping into a big position this year, maybe a starter role at one of those safety spots? That's something to read into there. But, man, I'm so excited for Media Days. Coming up that July 23rd is when Florida State goes. So, you know, guys, make sure you lock in with us now because we're going to have a lot of coverage coming up for you guys. So, man, give me some thoughts on Media Days, man. First time around. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm really excited. The opportunity to go kind of live out a dream of being a media and going and talking to the coaches and players. Now, here's what I love most about Plant the Spear being able to be there. When you look at other media outlets, and I won't name them because they're good, they're doing their job, they're going to give you all their normal stuff. Because like you said, Jesse, this is a normal day for them. They get access, they get credentialed all the time. So they're just kind of chumming out content. Whereas for a small entity like us at Plant the Spear, you're going to get it from a fan's perspective, the way you think about this program, the way you think about college football. You're going to hear that from us. And as we interpret what's being said from the players and from the coaches and from behind the scenes stuff, you're going to get it from us. And I think as a consumer of Florida State football, if I was just a consumer of that, man, plant the spears where I'd want to be, because I know I'm going to get the authentic expose of what's happening at media days, not the normal coach stuff, speak and all like that stuff. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited to be able to talk to the players, talk to Mike Norvell. I'm also excited about being hang out with you. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. We're going to do a lot of great work. We're also going to have a little bit of fun as well at the same time as too. I think it's going to be incredible. But then also too, I do think, or my hope is that this will be a reverse of fortune, because last year the players that came to media days did not turn out so well. So hopefully this year with Tommy, with Daryl Jackson, with Earl Little Jr. and with Richie Leonard, that they actually end up producing as much as they talk at this ACC media day. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's gonna be an incredible time. And yeah, it's got me juiced. It's got me ready for the season.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I'm excited about it. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year. Again, you know, I know it might sound silly for some of you guys that hear this, but it's like, again, this is something that we do as a passion project. We don't get paid for this. We just do it out of our love for FSU and our enjoyment to bringing this to you guys. And so, you know, to be able to get that media pass and to be able to be part of that for even if it's only 3 days a year, man, it's just it's so much fun to kind of live that dream. And we thank you guys for it, because if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be able to do it anyway. Right. And, you know, there's a lot of coaches and stuff we're going to get to talk to. I mean, I know we don't even play them this year. I'm kind of excited to interview. Well, maybe not interview, but ask a question like Bill Belichick.
Yeah. You think his girlfriend will be there?
I don't know. Do you think she'll allow him to be there?
Exactly. That's the question.
That's the question there. She might just sit at the podium and answer all the questions. You know, some of them are a little bit of a tough interview. There's a couple of jerks there. And, you know, the thing is, guys, if you want to help support us, we talk about this again, being a fan site and being just something that we do out of the love for FSU and the love for connecting with you guys. If you guys want to help support us here at Plant the Spear and the efforts of what we're doing to try and grow into, you know, maybe a real outlet one day, a big boy outlet someday, you can start by just hitting like and subscribe on this video to stay connected with us throughout the season. If you'd like to take that one step further, you can also hit that join button on YouTube and you can become a member of the PTS tribe. There will be some exclusive benefits throughout the season. We're going to do some giveaways, whether it be tickets or gift cards or merchandise. We're going to have some live streams that are members only and things like that. You're still going to get a lot of great content from us. Even if you don't, we're just going to throw in a couple of extra benefits for those who decide to support us by one low monthly financial gift there if you just hit that join button. So we greatly appreciate those that support us. And we got a lot of things going on. You know, Michael's our only member right now. So if you want to join, it's a great time to be number two in the door here.
But that's
a wonderful way if you'd love to do just a little bit extra and support us here at Plant Spirit. But again, a like and subscribe means a whole lot to us.
And let me just say this, like both Jesse and I, we have our own careers that we are passionate about that we do.
100%.
We take nothing from this. This is not about us making money. All that resourcing, all the support that you give actually goes right back into the show, making it better, giving you more content, producing better equipment, but all like that so that you as the fan and the part of PTS Tribe get a better experience from Plant the Spear. So your support matters most. Number one, with a like and subscribe and even share and tell people about it, like other Florida State fans. But then too, if you decide to take that extra step and be a part of PTS Tribe, all those resources go right back into making this show better for you.
For sure, man. Couldn't have said it better myself. It's like $5 a month. It's you know, it's not too bad there. We try to do something that's affordable. That's no more than a coffee or a beer a month or something that. But like you said, man, it goes right back into the program or here with Plant the Spear. And, you know, I mean, I'd love to hire a writer someday, maybe. Who knows? Maybe I could hire myself someday if we got big enough. That would be great. You know, maybe if you want an apprentice, reach out or something. We'll see. But, yeah, so let's move on, Michael. Let's talk about the next thing here, and that is Florida State versus Alabama. That massive season opener is officially sold out. Florida State released single-game tickets, just yesterday, and they sold out within a day. Obviously, season ticket holders had their choice in for a while now, but once those single game tickets came out, man, they were snapped up like that. And I mean, the prices are up there. This is a highly touted game, man. This is huge. And I understand the reduction of capacity. I understand that people don't like that. You're still looking at floating around 70,000 people. It's still going to be loud and dope. I have no doubt about that. But man, already the hype building for this game, even coming off of last year and everything that, that went into that. I'm just glad to see it is already sold out, man. I know that that atmosphere on August the 30th, Doak's going to be rocking. That is for sure.
Oh, it's going to be great. I literally, Jesse, have been waiting to this week, literally this weekend, I am going to start watching Alabama film, okay? Like, I've been waiting to this moment to start watching Alabama film. I'm actually also going to go back and watch Washington film when Ryan Grubb, the new offensive the offensive who has come back to work with DeBoer when he was at Washington with DeBoer as well, so that I can, I mean, I know I'm not calling plays or anything, but I just want to fully understand
what
Florida State could be reckoned to. I'm also going to watch Gus Malzahn film from UCF. I'm going to go watch Gus Malzahn film from Auburn. I'm going to watch Tony White from Syracuse and from Nebraska as well, too, so that we can have a better understanding and help you, the fan, understand what to expect as far as, you know, what we're potentially going to be able to see. So I'm really excited for this game.
Yeah, and it's funny because I just said I was going to do the same thing. I started making a playlist on YouTube of things I want to watch. And you know what? One thing that had me excited, man, I watched the interview, and of course we don't like Urban Meyer as Florida State fans, but I did watch, you know, he works with Fox in the Big Ten now, and they were talking about Tony White at Nebraska, and they did like just a little five-minute clip of his defense and what they bring to the table. And I think he said in that 5 minutes, I think he said at least 10 times, I hate playing this defense because it gives you – it's so multiple. It's there's so many things you can do out of it. And it's just a nightmare for offensive coordinators to try and figure out. So, like, I'm really excited about that as well. You know, just, again, the further you get into it, the more – and you guys know here at Plant the Spear, sometimes we might go a little long on the episode. Sometimes the articles might be a little bit longer than some of the other outlets that you see. We don't necessarily believe in fluff content here. It's all kind of meat and potatoes straight on the plate. So we're going to go in depth. And so, yeah, it's a good time to lock in with us before the season. But, Michael, let's talk about – these impact players, right? These are guys, and you know, when you think back to last year, something that we did last year was like a breakout player watch list. And this is kind of like that, but it's not, right? This is someone who could have a breakout season, of course, but from just making an impact. You know, again, the premise of this really came from the Tommy Castellanos interview where he said, I hope people don't think Florida State's the same team again this year. We got weapons. And I was like, but do we, though? Because we, you know what I mean? Because like we've talked about it before.
Like, are you sure?
Right. And so we've talked about it on the show before where I think Florida State has a collection of good, but there's not a lot of household names, right? And so that's – I started looking. Like, let me pick and choose some of these guys. Let me look and see where I can find some guys that, you know, the ones we're going to talk about here are impact player watch lists with the potential for a breakout season, because this is not paper talent that we're about to talk about. These guys have done it on the field, maybe just in a limited capacity. Yep. Maybe they haven't been a starter, but in their role, they've done a great job. Some of these guys we're going to talk about are coming off injury. Can they get back to pre-injury production? That's going to be some of the things we're going to talk about. But again, this is not paper talent. These are guys who have done it. We've seen snippets of what they can be. And if they can get back to that at Florida State, then, man, I think Florida State really has some weapons. And I think they might surprise some people. I think some of these names can turn into household names by the end of the year. I think that, you know, if they hit, you could have, unlike last season where we saw a lot of the transfers come in that were highly touted that didn't hit, if these guys are able to come in and hit, man, I think Florida State has some really underrated weapons on this offense that have the potential to break out. So that's why we picked these five guys. We got some honorable mentions as well. Of course, this isn't the whole list. There's some other guys that are good players. But what we're talking about today is five guys who have been the best at their position or near the top of their position during their time in college. You know, and I think a great example, we were talking about this before the show, was, you know, if you talk about a receiver like a Deuce. Deuce has been consistently productive at a pretty decent level, right? You can see him having a breakout season, but you have to kind of project what he can be to see that breakout season happen. But with some of the guys we're going to talk about today, these guys have done it.
Right.
It's just maybe been in a small sample size or something like that. So that's the big thing. Just a show note, I'm going to be referencing some notes throughout this. So if it sounds like I'm kind of reading off of that, you guys know I take a lot of notes. I do a lot of research and stuff for every single show. And look, guys, I only got one hamster upstairs. And, you know, he's got asthma and a bad hip. So, like, if he falls off the wheel, the show is getting derailed. So I'm going to be referencing some notes there. But, Michael, let's jump on into this list here. First up is Oklahoma running back Gavin Sawchuk. And this might be one of the players I'm most excited to see on Florida State's roster in 2025. When I started looking into Sawchuk and what he's done, man, you can, this is like fireworks strapped to a gas can, just waiting for someone to light it. And I'm excited because, you know, coming into 2025, Michael, FSU's running back room, we said it felt like it had pretty decent depth. You had a lot of guys, you know what I mean? Like, what do they say? Jag, like just another guy or whatever. Like you got a bunch of just another guy. That doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean they're necessarily good. You just didn't feel like you had a true home run hitter at the position. Most of us were betting on that to be true freshman Usman Chroma, you know, coming in, but he wasn't even on campus in the spring.
That's right.
We were counting on him to be that potential X factor. And don't get me wrong, I'm really excited to see Chroma. I am. Yes. I think he's going to get a lot of carries, like probably after that Alabama game. You're going to see those two kind of tune-up games. I think you're going to see him get his chance. But I really do feel like Florida State made an underrated addition by adding Oklahoma transfer Gavin Sawchuk. So let's talk about him, Michael. 5'11", 202-pound redshirt junior, spent first three seasons at Oklahoma, and he showed flashes of why he was a composite four-star. He was a top 100 national recruit, top 10 running back in the 2022 class, and the number one player coming out of the state of Colorado. He's got hype already on the recruiting trail. So you look at as a freshman in 2022, he comes in with his first real action against none other than Florida State in the Cheez-It Bowl that year, which, sorry, Gavin, yeah, you lost that one, buddy, but, you know, you're on the winning team. It can't beat them, join them, so I appreciate that. But in that game, Michael, he ran for 107 yards and a touchdown and averaged 7.1 yards per carry. Ran all over us. And if I remember correctly, because I remember previewing that game back in 2022, I want to say they had at least two starting offensive linemen out, and one of them was like an All-American type of guy.
They did.
So, man, to really gash us like that, you kind of saw, okay, and then you see where in 2023, he began to emerge as a difference maker for Oklahoma. He started the final seven games of the season, and in that season, he racked up 744 yards, nine touchdowns, and added another 94 through the air. But I want to focus in on that 2023 season real quick, because some of the numbers that he put in were really impressive, and I'm coming at this from a home run hitter in the running back room standpoint. So in that season, he finished eighth in the Power Four in breakaway percentage. Now, what breakaway percentage is, according to PFF or Pro Football Focus, that is the percentage of your total yards that come from designed runs over 15 yards. So basically, a breakaway run of over 15 yards. A home run. This is telling you that he can be a home run hitter. Okay. 54% of his yards came on runs, basically bursts of over 15 yards. That's a lot of home runs, Michael, if I'm looking. So top 10 in the country there. 54% of his yards, like I said, came on runs of 15 plus. That just shows his home run hitting ability. Yeah. He was tied for 28th in the power four in runs of 15 plus yards with 14 runs. And he didn't have a lot of carries, man. 26 of the 28 running backs that finished ahead of him had more carries by anywhere from 50 to 100 more carries.
Yeah.
And so you look at the percentage of 15-yard runs he was able to do, that's really impressive. Man. Even further, man, top 20 in yards per carry in the Power Four at 6.2 in 2023. Top 20 in yards per carry. And he ended the season with five consecutive 100-yard games. That's pretty impressive. All against Power Five teams. Power Four now. But man, when you just really hone in, because we said he started the final seven games, but when you look at when he got hot, that final five games of 2023 against all Big 12 teams, 617 yards, six touchdowns, averaged 7.4 yards per carry, made for 17 missed tackles, had 278 of that 617 yards came after contact. He had 17 runs of over 10 yards. And that's 7.4 yards per carry, because his stats do get a little bit skewed for 2023, because there was like one where he had one carry for negative 1 yard. That kind of screws your stats there. That's 7.4 yards per carry in that last five games would have been tied for second in the Power Four in 2023. And so the interesting thing too, Michael, I was looking at this, you know, when you look at the numbers, roughly 20% of his rush attempts in those final five games went for 10 yards or more.
Yeah.
So you can see that home run hitting ability. Now, unfortunately, he did battle injury in 2024 that limited his availability and his production. But the last thing I want to say here about Gavin Sawchuk is I want to focus in on when he really got an opportunity to get going, when he got an opportunity to get hot, and that is games with double-digit carries at least, because there's a lot of times where he, you know, you just really didn't have a chance to get going.
Right.
And so throughout his career, you can, this is where you start to see the immense potential out of Sawchuk. So he has 8 games throughout his career where he had double-digit carries. 7 of those games were against Power 4 teams, and the 8th came against Navy. So again, pretty much all good competition in those 8 games. Now imagine, Michael, imagine, it's easy to imagine, if he has 8 games with double-digit carries. What if he had, this was 8 games of Florida State season, right? 854 yards, 9 touchdowns, 6.95 yards per carry, 27 missed tackles forced. 54% of those yards came after contact. He had 22 runs over 10 yards, averaged 5 yards per carry or greater in every single game, scored a touchdown in 7 of 8 games, and rushed for 100 yards in 6 of those 8 games that he had double-digit carries. That means in 75% of the games that he had double-digit carries, he rushed for over 100 yards. And to put into perspective how impressive that is. Now, again, smaller sample size, so I get it, you got to do it consistent. I went back and looked at some of FSU's best running backs in recent history for comparison. So in games with double-digit carries that the back hit 100 yards, Devontae Freeman was at 30%. Trey Benson was at 31.6%. Cam Akers was at 32.4%. Dalvin Cook, the GOAT of running backs for Florida State, was at 65.6%. Ooh, that's daggone impressive.
That's,
but Gavin Sawchuk's at 75%. Now, again, I'm not saying he is the next Dalvin Cook because his sample size is a lot smaller.
Right.
But what I am saying is when you really look at the numbers and you look at it from a perspective of where he got an opportunity to get going, I mean, he can be a game changer for Florida State.
Yeah.
And, you know, that 2023 season, and I'll throw it back to you on this, that 2023 season, I went back and kind of looked at Gus's running backs and things like that, was a lot, almost identical to R.J. Harvey's 2022 season at Central Florida under Gus Malzahn. So in 2022, R.J. Harvey, who was a daggone good back for Central Florida there, 118 carries, 796 yards, 6.75 yards per carry, 5 touchdowns. He averaged 9 attempts per game and had around an average of 61.2 yards per game. Gavin Sawchuk in 23, 120 attempts, 744 yards, 6.2 yards a carry, 9 touchdowns, 10 attempts a game, and 62 yards per game. Those numbers are almost identical.
Yeah.
Why is that significant, Michael? Well, R.J. Harvey would go on to lead Central Florida in rushing the next 2 years with over 200 carries in each season, averaging almost 1,500 yards and 20 touchdowns per year. If healthy, could we see Gavin Sawchuk take that similar jump in production and have an R.J. Harvey type of season? Because, man, that would be massive for this offense. Florida State hasn't had a 1,000-yard rusher since Cam Akers, I think, in 2017 or 2018. So if you can get him to have a 12 to 1,500-yard season, watch out, man. And I think the numbers that we've laid out here, as I throw it back to you, it just goes to show you that Florida State, they got a deep stable and different skill sets in that backfield. But I think you found your potential home run hitter. Now, he's got to do it consistently, and he's got to stay healthy. But if he can, man, I think Sawchuk might be the most underrated addition to this team in this offseason.
Yeah, I think so, too, as well. I think when you look at just how he is as a player, he's electric. He's got game-breaking speed. He's got home run hitting potential. I mean, he's that back. He has good vision. He gets low to the ground. He's not easy to bring down. In the double-digit games that he's been in, you see the stats. The only thing I would say to that is in those games that he rushed for double digits, Oklahoma is 4-4 in those games. Yeah. And so you have to – and there are so many other factors than other than him in those games. But when he has been allowed to rush and run and actually been given the ball and been healthy, he has been electric. He has proven that he can actually be very productive. So if you give him – let's say the starting minutes of a running back in this Gus Malzahn offense, we've seen over and over again. You just talked about R.J. Harvey. I mean, 1 year, R.J. Harvey had 1,400 yards rushing. 1,400 yards. I mean, my gosh, when's the last time you saw a running back with 1,400 yards rushing, right?
Yeah.
In the game or in the season. And so I really think that if Gavin Sawchuk is fully healed from his injury and he's back and Gus Malzahn uses him the way he typically does, he could be a not just a impact but a breakout impact player for Florida State.
Oh, 1,000%. Now, you do talk about the win-loss, which is interesting. But like you said, there's a lot of factors to go in there, right? Because, I mean, you know, R.J. Harvey ran for almost 1,500 yards last year, and they went 4-8. So
that's right. That's what I'm saying.
It's a team effort, right? Exactly. And we got more guys to get to, so we're going to have some defensive guys too. But, man, I just – you know, like I said, man, when I looked at the limited sample size, but it's like, man, every time I started looking, I'm like, man, every time this guy gets a chance to get going –
yeah,
he is pumping out some numbers. And yeah, so that it just really, man, again, like it got me really excited because I like a lot of the backs that you got in the room. I just think you needed that home run hitter. And, yep, and I don't, you can go back to the example of Auburn and Michael Dyer, right? Where, yep, the freshman running back was the MVP of the national championship game in 2010 when Gus was the offensive coordinator. So if that guy is Chroma, we'll put him, yep, on the field. But it's just, you know, you're talking about relying on a redshirt junior versus relying on a true freshman who wasn't here in spring. And yeah, so I like that you have maybe multiple options there as well.
Yeah.
Now, the number two guy on this list, and I'm sorry, guys, if that sounded like I talked for a really long time there. it's just I had a lot of notes that I needed to read on that.
Yep.
So next up is defensive end James Williams. This was one of the, you know, highly touted transfers that came in, yeah, from Nebraska with Tony White, with Terrence Knighton. You kind of knew you were going to get him. You have seen him in limited capacity. This was a big addition for Florida State because, I mean, Michael, when you think about it, Florida State was essentially starting over at the defensive, yeah, end position. You had basically Marvin Jones Jr. was gone. Pat Payton is gone. You know, a lot, Byron Turner's gone. So, like, you had to find some bodies, first off.
Right,
and
right,
you know, he was one that looks like he has a really high upside. Now, when we go back to what I said in the beginning, where you talk about these guys that they've only done it in snippets and you need to see them be able to do it on a consistent basis, that has a lot to do with James Williams, right? He, right, served primarily as a package player on a solid defensive line at Nebraska. He, that's, was behind, right, some dudes that are NFL caliber guys. But now he's going to be asked to serve as a three-down starter for Florida, that's, State, right, in 2025. So, you know, his main role at Nebraska was a pass rush specialist where he flashed his really, really high upside. But what you need to see is, can he do run defense? Can he do, correct, this for three downs? Can he be that consistent starter where he's going to play 400 or 500 snaps instead of 188 snaps like he did last year? But with that being said, let's talk about what he did in the sample size that we do have to look at here. And he only played 188 total snaps last year. But he was second on the team in pressures with 31 and sacks with 5. The team leader at Nebraska played over 400 more snaps than he did. And the number three guy played over 200 more. So from a body of work perspective, James Williams led Nebraska basically by a country mile. Now, some of the national things that we talk about here with James Williams, he led the country in pass rush production, according to Pro Football Focus. And what that is that grades sacks, hits, and hurries based on how many times a player rushes the passer. And why that's important is because, again, if you just go from a raw number standpoint, he's not going to be the leader of the country up there in sacks and pressures because he didn't play a lot. And he only played in certain packages, right? But when you grade it based on that percentage, that's when you see his number shine. And that's why he was literally he was the most productive pass rushing defensive end in the country last year when you address for workload. So, man, that's really exciting too. He was also ranked 17th in pass rush win rate. That's a little tough one to say there. Yeah. But, man, I mean, you see his pass rush ability is already off the charts. Now, being, yeah, a package player, previously I went back and looked. He only played 40 snaps of run defense last season. So the biggest question mark will obviously be how well he can stop the run and if he can be that full-time starter. But also do keep in mind, since arriving in Tallahassee, he has gained around, according to the roster that I found, you know, for Florida State for 2025, he's gained about 12 pounds. I've heard it's, okay, a little north of that. So you're up at 262 now. And so that should really help with his ability to be a run stopper there. But as a pass rusher, man, there is no question that he has proven to be one of the best in the country. And hopefully he can step into that larger role and back up that production here at Florida State. And the last thing I want to say here about James Williams before I throw it back to you is I kind of wanted to look at compared to who's he replacing, because you, mm-hmm, talk about this all the time, the baseball term, war, that's the wins, right, above war, replacement. Yep. So 2024, looking at pass rush snaps only, this is only snaps where you were rushing the passer. So James Williams at Nebraska in 2024 played 142 rush snaps, had 31 pressures, 5 sacks. Last year, your leader was Josh Farmer, had 242, so 100 more pass rush snaps, had 26 pressures, 4 less than James Williams, and 1 less sack at 4. Daryl Jackson was number two, 246 snaps, so over 100 more, had 30 pressures and 3.5 sacks. Marvin Jones Jr., 187 pass rush snaps, 16 pressures, 4 sacks, and Patrick Payton, 277 snaps of pass rush, 26 pressures, 4 sacks. So James Williams, with less snaps, outproduced every single one of your starting defensive linemen last year. So, man, I think this guy could, if he can do it consistently and if he can get that run defense down, man, I think he can be a game changer for Florida State.
Absolutely. Think about this. James Williams has only played in 16 games in his career so far. 16. He played in 4 in 2023, and then he played in all 12 in 2024, right? 16 games, okay? In 16 of those games, he's had 6 games where he did no stats whatsoever. Nothing. Just zeros across the board, okay?
Right.
When you break that percentage down, that's 37.5%, which means in the games he played in, he has been productive 62.5% of the time, okay, in the games he's played in. So the evidence would tell you that the more snaps he plays, the right. more productive he gets, right?
Yeah.
And now he's going to get an opportunity to garner most of the defensive snaps, pass rushing and run against the run as well, too. Like,
yeah,
you know, depending on how Tony White wants to leverage his scheme. But we would imagine you don't bring and pay the money you paid him to just be a pass rushing specialist. So you're going to want him to be, like you said, a 3-down defensive lineman. So if he's productive in the 16 games, 62.5% of the time, what happens when he plays all 12 games again?
Yeah,
at 62% of the rate, right?
With a bigger workload,
you would imagine that productivity is going to go up. So absolutely, he can be one of those breakout impact players.
Oh yeah, and you know, if you talk about, like, what if you have a game where he played 3 snaps or something like that, or 10 snaps, but he was only playing in a pass rush situation, and you have a screen pass away from him.
Right.
Well, of course, you're not going to record a stat there. Exactly. It doesn't mean you didn't do your job. It just means you didn't have an opportunity. And yeah, man. So, I mean, I really feel like James Williams can be that guy for Florida State if he can do it on a consistent basis. But let me, before we move on to the next player, I want to give you one to watch here, too. And that is defensive end transfer from Western Kentucky, Deontay McCray. 6'4", 275, has 1,000 snaps of experience. He was third in run play tackles last year. At 41, top 20 in run play tackle assists last year with 14. He was 26 in stops, which is a tackle that constitutes as a failure for the offense. Basically, they didn't get the yards necessary on a certain down that they needed to. Only had a 3.3 missed tackle percentage, which was also got him to be top 10 in tackle grade. Now, he come from Western Kentucky, so you got to obviously translate to the Power Four there. But Western Kentucky did play Alabama and Boston College last year. Against Alabama, he graded out on PFF at 63.6, which, you know, that's above average. I will say that.
Yeah.
And anytime you're Western Kentucky going against Alabama, you don't expect great grades.
Right.
But against Boston College, 68.7, which 70 is really kind of what you're looking for. And so, man, this is one of your best run stoppers on the defensive line at the defensive end. So that's one to watch there with Deontay McCray. But let's move on to number 3, Michael, and that is wide receiver Squirrel White. Look, Florida State's receiving core last year was a massive letdown. They had, I believe it was the highest drop pass percentage in the country. There was no question, Michael, that this position group needed an overhaul for 2025. And that is exactly what Florida State did, similar to the offensive line. New coach, new starters, all this new stuff was brought in. And in that mix, Florida State brought in one of the fastest players in the country, and that is Tennessee transfer Squirrel White, who I am really excited to see. I told you guys last episode, I don't doubt Deuce is going to be a game changer for Florida State. I get all that. I think Squirrel White's being slept on if he can stay healthy. That's the caveat with Squirrel White. 5'10", 170, senior, brings 3 years of experience and a history of production. Unfortunately, just like Gavin Sawchuk that we talked about earlier, he was limited by injury in 2024, and he saw a dip in production from that. You also had Tennessee's passing offense took a dip last year when Nico took over at quarterback as a freshman. You know, he was kind of more of a, last year, more of a handoff game manager type of guy. Wasn't the greatest passer.
Wouldn't ask to do a lot. Yeah,
exactly. So their passing offense took a dip as a whole. It wasn't just Squirrel White. But man, when he's healthy, he has really shown the potential to be a game breaker. When you look back at his career there at Tennessee, he put up impressive numbers from the get-go, even as a freshman in 2022. 475 yards on 29 receptions with 2 touchdowns, averaged 16.4 yards per catch, And he had solid hands with a 72.5% reception percentage. I love to hear that. First off, got a receiver who can catch the ball, Michael. It's a novel concept, I know. Right. But I love to hear about it. Top 50 in that reception, or excuse me, top 50 of 445 wide receivers in wide receiver rating per PFF, which is basically like a quarterback rating for wide receivers. They just use different metrics. And he was also ranked number one in the country in yards per route run. Now, if that's that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to you, I looked it up on PFF, and it basically identifies receivers who are game changers on every snap rather than total yards or total reception. So like if you have a 10 catch or a 200 yard game, this kind of averages out for that.
Right.
And so as a freshman, he was number one in the country in yards per route run. Now, his numbers did take a little bit of a dip after that from a percentage standpoint, but he followed that up with a breakout season in 2023, catching 67 passes for 803 yards and two touchdowns. He averaged 12 yards a catch with another solid 69.8% reception rate, and he led Tennessee in receptions and yardage that season. So, man, the way I want to look at this is acknowledging, first off, like, y'all don't flame me in the comments. Listen to me first. Acknowledging that these are two different types of receivers with two different body types. The truth is, man, in 2023, Squirrel White put up more receptions and more yards with a better catch percentage than Keon Coleman did at Florida State in the same season. Squirrel White was only targeted seven more times. So, I mean, I think he put up something like 200 more yards.
Yeah.
On only seven more targets. And FSU actually threw the ball 23 more times than Tennessee did that season. So he was a breakout receiver for them. He has five 100-yard games over his first three seasons. Same number that Keon had.
Yeah.
Two of those five games came against Clemson and Alabama, who are both really, really good teams. Oh, and they also happen to be on your schedule this year.
Correct.
So he put up 100 yards on both of them. So at the end of the day, Michael, I'm not saying Squirrel White is better than Keon Coleman. I'm not saying that.
Nope.
But what I am saying is that when healthy, his production capabilities speak for themselves.
Yep.
So if we can get back to where he was in 2023 and he can stay productive, I understand you're going to have a little bit of a limiting factor from a quarterback situation at Florida State as well, because Castellanos isn't a great passer, but he's pretty decent there. Man, I think Squirrel White could be an X factor for Florida State this year. I think a lot of the spotlight's going on Deuce Robinson, and rightfully so. I mean, you got speed and size on the outside. But, man, when I look at what he's been able to do, if you can get peak Squirrel White, I think he can be an X factor for Florida State at the receiver position.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. And you have to think about this. This is what I actually like about this comparison, is that when you look at 2023 Tennessee, you're basically looking at what Florida State could potentially be here in 2025. And I mean offensive scheme wise. They had Joe Milton as their quarterback. He wasn't known as the greatest passer of all time. That season, he had 2,800 yards for 20 touchdowns, five interceptions, threw for 354. He threw 354 times, had a 64.7% completion percentage that year. Okay. But that year was more so predicated on rushing the ball. That's what Josh Heupel really, really honed in on that year, that thing. And so in that type of season, okay, in that type of season, Squirrel White had 803 yards, 67 catches, right? Averaged 12 yards a catch. Yes, he only had two touchdowns, but he averaged 12 yards a catch on 67 catches.
Yeah.
And a very similar offensive style is what he's walking into this year. Now you have another quarterback who is more predominantly a better runner than he is a thrower, right? So obviously Gus Malzahn is going to cater that offense to that way. But when they do throw the ball, those east and west, those screen, those bubble routes, those drags, those mesh routes where they're bringing defenders against each other, right? And even a little bit of like what they call long drag, where he's running 10 to 15 yards and then coming across the field to drag those safeties across. Man, you're going to see Squirrel White, if healthy, in that same vein, the same way he was used at Tennessee in 2023. So I think, again, yes, absolutely. If he can produce and stay healthy the same way, you're looking at another breakout impact player.
Exactly. And I love the thing that you said about getting the ball in space to him and letting him make things happen, because I think that's where he's really going to shine. I mean, to me, of course, he could just take the top off of defense and just burn a DB and get open. You know, you got Deuce, who's the big mismatch on outside on deep balls. You're going to have that all day long. But, man, if you can get him the ball in space or let him just run past a DB, to me, man, Squirrel White has the potential to be really great. And I think he's kind of like name brand Pokey Wilson, right? You know what I mean? Like, no, we love Pokey, like, yeah, obviously. Yep. You know, but he was kind of like the great value version of Squirrel White. You know what I mean? Like, he was good for us, but he was never really that top tier receiver.
That's right.
I think Squirrel White has that ability. I mean, you're not putting up 800 yards, you know, against good competition being pretty good. He just has to stay healthy, man. And so I'm excited to see him in this offense. Now, number four on the list. And, you know, Michael, offensive linemen may not always get their time in the limelight. But we know all too well that they can make or break an offense. And we say here on Plant the Spear, the most important position in the game of football is the offensive line. I know a lot of people say it's quarterback, but without a good offensive line, well, you don't really have a good quarterback because he's going to be running for his life. And so that's why number four for me is offensive lineman Luke Pettibon. Comes in as a transfer from Wake Forest. He's going to be your more than likely your starting center this year. And, you know, offensive line, like we talked about, man, they can make or break an offense. And after fielding one of the worst units in all of the college football in the country last year, you know, Florida State, again, just like that receiver room, man, they made sweeping changes. New coach, four new projected starters. And I think one of the top ones to keep your eye on here is that center transfer, Luke Pettibon, because, man, you look back at his history. And again, I mean, I know it's Wake, and you might not associate that name with a big program, but he's essentially playing the same competition that you are in the ACC.
Right.
Top 20 graded center in the FBS the last two seasons per PFF. He was the highest graded pass blocking center in the entire country last year. Finished top five in efficiency grade per PFF. In 2023, he was top 20 in run blocking, which shows he is well-rounded. He can do more than just pass block. He can run block as well. Obviously, with Gus's system, you're going to want a guy who can run block too. And he is actually, because he stayed in the ACC coming to Florida State from Wake Forest, he is the highest graded returning center in the conference, in the entire conference. So, man, I mean, you're talking about a guy that in the Power Four was a top 20 center the last 2 years, is the best returning center on paper, at least anyway, you know, from what he did. I mean, it's on paper, but he earned that number as the highest graded returning center in the ACC. And we've already heard remarks about him through the spring, even though it was closed. We heard some, you know, some things through the tea leaves where he was a consistent top performer. He can snap the ball consistently, which is already an improvement from where we came before. And I think that's why he deserves to be mentioned, because he's already living up to the hype. And man, when you look at the numbers, he's been one of the top offensive linemen in the game the last couple of years. Yep. And so I think this is a guy that can come in and he can be an anchor for this group. He can be a leader of a turnaround, a renaissance maybe for that offensive line under Herb Hand. 22 starts, almost 1,700 snaps of experience in the ACC. He was a team captain at Wake, which speaks to the kind of culture guy that he can be too. And you know, statistically, Pettibon, he should be, you know, we got to see it in action first, but he should be a considerable upgrade at center over what we had, especially when it comes to pass blocking. And I'll give you some numbers and then I'll throw this back to you here, Michael. Yeah. But looking at pressure numbers for basically your pass blocking here for Pettibon versus former starter Maurice Smith from the past 2 years, both played in the ACC against similar competition, so keep that in mind. Maurice Smith in 2024 allowed 19 pressures on 441 snaps. Luke Pettibon allowed 6 pressures on 467 snaps. So less than half pressures and more snaps. In 2023, Maurice Smith gave up 18 pressures on 419 snaps. Luke Pettibon gave up 9 on 415 snaps. So in almost identical workloads, you're giving up half or more of the pressures that he's given. Exactly. So, I mean, in the same workload, he performed much better against similar competition. And so, as you can see, Pettibon performed well, I think he should be an immediate difference maker for a unit that really, really needs it. And the last thing before I throw it to you, man, one of the reasons I'm really excited for 2025 is I do think this offensive line is going to make a massive turnaround. Because, you know, you got Pettibon who can be the anchor from the center, the quarterback of the offensive line unit, help get everybody lined up. But then a couple honorable mentions that I have here, man, it's also worth noting that when I started looking up some other offensive linemen in this group, Ole Miss transfer Michael Pettis, who, by the way, is like 6'7", 360. Love it. He was a top 10 graded offensive tackle in the SEC last year. So you're getting one of the top 10. I think he would have been top 3 returning tackles in the SEC, but he transferred to the ACC. And then UCF transfer Adrian Medley was a top 15 graded guard in the Big 12 last year. So, man, when you look at some of these guys that Florida State has brought in, you're getting the number one returning center in the ACC, a top 10 returning tackle there from the SEC, a top 15 guard from the Big 12. Also, you know, don't sleep on Jacob Rizzi. I was starting to look at some of our own linemen, man. He is your highest graded returning lineman this season for Florida State. Had a PFF grade of 72.8, which is great. And he was consistent across the board in his run and his pass blocking grades. For comparison, Terrence Ferguson, a guy he rotated with, had a PFF grade of 42.6. So that was terrible. He played 300 snaps last year. So he has some experience. He's had over 650 career snaps coming from Harvard, and he has graded above 70 in each of the past three seasons. So, man, I think Florida State has some pretty nice pieces on this offensive line. And, you know, again, the three we talked about are the best in their conference, some of the best in their conference. But I think Luke Pettibon is that guy to keep your eye on as really the anchor for this offensive line.
Yeah, when you talk about bringing in the third rated pass blocking center in the nation,
Yeah.
88.3% you know, PFF grade in the nation.
Yeah.
No offense to Murray Smith, but this is an upgrade. This is a true big time upgrade. Point blank. That's all I need to say. This was an upgrade.
Yeah. And he can snap the ball consistently. So
thank you.
Let's move on to number five. That is defensive back transfer from Houston, Jeremiah Wilson. Now, this one is a little different than the other ones on the list, right? Or maybe more similar to Luke Pettibon. Like, he's done it, and he's done it for an entire season. So this is a guy that there's not a lot of guesswork in this. Now, there is guesswork whether he can do it against the ACC competition, who typically has good offenses, but the Big 12 is a conference that has pretty good offenses, and he went against them. And, you know, Florida State had a lot of turnover in the secondary the past 2 years. You basically lost a lot of your top guys after 23. You lost a lot of your top guys after 24 at the corner position anyway. And losing two veteran corners, man, you know, that's not an easy thing to replace. And so, you know, Florida State, we knew coming into the season, has a lot of talented options. There just wasn't a lot of experience in that group, right? Quindarius Jones comes in as one of your top guys there, 256 snaps. Edwin Joseph, 188 snaps. Jabril Rawls, who's a contender for the starting spot, 137 snaps. A lot of talent, not a lot of experience.
Right.
Jeremiah Wilson brings that veteran presence at corner. 13 starts, 1,000 snaps of experience, and that's what makes him such a big addition, man. He can lock down that one side. And then everyone who was slated to start before, who was in that competition, you can kind of bump them down one spot. So you're getting the cream of the crop, and you're getting better depth at the corner position too. But when you look back to that breakout season he had at Houston, man, well, really, when you talk about getting him out of the portal, he was a top five player in the portal and the number one cornerback, according to On Three. He already has experience in Tony White's defense from his time at Syracuse, which is great. But when you talk about that breakout season last year at Houston, he finished as a top five graded corner in the country per PFF. He was tied for third in interceptions by a power four corner with four, which, by the way, if you're not keeping score, or if you are keeping score, that's as many as Florida State's entire team had last
year. Thank you.
Top 25 in completion percentage allowed at 44.7%. Look, the gist of it, man, is the kid is a ball hawk, right? Yeah. And he should provide an immediate impact. He should hold down one of those corner spots. He's already familiar with his defense, which means he can also help those young guys get up to speed in the new scheme. At the end of the day, man, this is a major addition for Florida State. You're getting a top five corner in the country at a place that, you know, tabs itself DBU, so it's good to have him there. And, you know, again, when you start stacking up these potential players, this is one that I feel like you should be able to take to the bank because he's done it in the power four and he had a breakout season last year. So if he can carry that forward this year, man, I'm really excited about what Jeremiah Wilson brings. And he might be one of the best players on your roster, period.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Listen, 86.9 overall PFF grade. That's top four, Jesse, in all of the power four.
Yeah.
So we literally have one of the four best corners who knows this 3-3-5 defense, has played 22 games at Syracuse, right? Then also played 12 games at Houston. Yeah, like, he is going to be the anchor for that defense on the backside, Obviously, the linebackers there, depending on how, you know, still trying to figure out how they get the calls in, who's going to be making those calls. But they run that backside defensive back there with the safeties, the three safeties, and the DBs back there. Jeremiah Wilson is going to lock down one of those boundary corners. Right.
Yep.
So, which means you can put him on their best receiver and say, he's all yours. Have at it. Right.
Yep.
That way you take away one half of the field. If you take away one half of the field on a defensive scheme, buddy.
Yeah.
You got something cooking. And that's where I think Jeremiah Wilson is going to be big time for Florida State this season.
For sure. And, you know, and then if you lock down maybe their best guy, you can get help to someone else if you That's have right. a weak spot. And so, That's yeah, right. I think he's going to be big. And, you know, as we get to wrap this part up, you're talking about a running back that has a real opportunity to be a home run hitter.
Yeah.
We named a defensive lineman who was one of the best pass rushers in the country last year.
Right.
We named an offensive lineman who is the best in the ACC returning this year. You named a wide receiver who was one of the better ones in the country consistently until he was dealing with some injury and poor quarterback play. And you got a top five cornerback from, you know, from the power four level of last year. You also got a top 10 offensive lineman, a top 15 offensive lineman. So I think when Tommy Castellanos claimed that FSU has weapons, he wasn't wrong, man. And the list doesn't end here. There's probably five more guys that Correct. We could name, but these were potential impact players, like I said, who weren't just paper talent. They performed at a high level on the field. It just maybe wasn't in a starting role that Florida Absolutely. State needs them to do. So if yep. they can do it this year, man, I think this is really – it's obviously, we know it takes a team effort to bring That's wins right. to the win column. But right. I think when you see these potential weapons that Florida State has, I think it makes you feel like the ceiling could be a little bit higher for Florida yeah. State than some expect if these things pan out, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's really the point that I was trying to get across with this episode is, man, you do have some weapons now. Let's not sleep on yeah. what Florida State did in the portal this offseason.
No, absolutely. And just to even just quickly say, like, we're not even counting on the fact, we're not even talking about the fact, sorry, that what about the linebackers we just brought in, right? Right. What about yep. Juice, who showed flashes of goodness last season and could yeah. probably be much better this year? What about Shaheen Brown, right? That's the big question mark in the secondary. Does Shaheen get back to that 2023 level where he was a ball hawking, knock your teeth out kind of safety, right? Look, yeah. we haven't even talked about the rest of the running back room, right? That we have some returning players. Does Roydell Williams actually step up this year again? So there are other opportunities for players who were maybe question marks last year or didn't produce as well last year to actually produce yep. in this way on top of the five that we just named. If that happens, yeah. the sky's the limit for Florida State.
100%, man. And even you talk about the linebackers, you talk about Elijah Herring, led Memphis yes. in tackles last year, led Tennessee in the tackles the year before that. You know, again, Daryl Jackson is a guy that's just, I mean, he's just waiting for right. a breakout season. He's got all the physical tools. And so, yeah, I mean, again, like we said, maybe Florida State doesn't have many household names right now.
Right.
But they got some guys that have shown the potential to become household names by the end of right. the season if they can live up to the hype, man. So, all right, Michael, last thing before we get out of here, the final question. We got to make it fast because I know you got an appointment you got to be at, so we got to get up out of here. Let's keep it with the thought of Doak, right? Because okay. we're talking about remodel Doak, game one against Alabama coming up real soon. And so the question for today is going to be, Michael, what was your favorite game in Doak Campbell Stadium? Mm. And then we'll throw a bonus in there. What was your favorite FSU game that you attended that was not in Doak? And so I'll yeah. give you some time to think here. So for me, man, my favorite game in Doak, and please hear us out, guys, right? We're of the younger generation, okay? We're lost decade kids.
That's right.
You know, we were like baptized in the 90s.
That's right.
And then raised in the lost decade.
That's which, right.
But man, I started going to games in the early 2000s is when I started going, when I was still a kid. My dad was a Michigan State fan, so it's not like we were, you know, Florida State. I was not raised by Florida State fans. But you know, I've been to some big ones, man. 2011 Oklahoma was probably yeah. the loudest game I've ever been to, without yeah. a doubt, but I'm not going to pick a loss.
Yeah.
So for me, man, my favorite game that I ever went to was 2013 Miami against Florida State. That game, I've told the story before, man. That game was an atmosphere like I've never seen. And I don't 2022 LSU is probably the closest I've seen. Like, you could not – I remember calling my friend because I'm like, dude, I can't hear myself think in the concourses. It's so loud. There, and I kid you not, there were piles of liquor bottles at the gate yeah. the size of a Volkswagen. I mean, there were people fighting in the stands, arguing in the stands. It was – a good game, too. That was yeah. a James Winston game.
That was
game.
A hype game. Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, on top of that, Michael, that was actually, fun fact, that was the last meeting between Miami and Florida State in Doak where they were both ranked.
Ranked.
Before that, you go back 10. To 2010. Yeah, and they were both top 10. And that's yep. the thing when you talk about that rivalry, man. I love 45-3. I love kicking the crap out of Miami. Yeah. But when there's something on the line in that game, when their fans actually come out of the woodwork and choose to cheer on their team.
Yes.
And it's and that's two top 10 teams. Man, that game is second to none. Florida yeah. State Miami is my favorite game on the schedule. And for my favorite one outside of Doak Campbell Stadium, and we both agreed to exclude the national championship
yes.
because that is easily our number one.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
easily. You can't top that. being at a national championship game, it's going to be LSU in 2022. The game I mentioned earlier, because man, just being in New Orleans, taking over that city, being in the Superdome, AC in a game in the South in the summer is a godsend. That was one where in the concourses, man, it was, there was so much smack talk. You couldn't, LSU fans were so confident. You couldn't hear yourself think, man, it was an amazing game as well. So that's my two favorite, man. Again, we're of the younger generation, but man, 2013 Miami in Doak and 2022 LSU outside of Doak. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, my first recollection of Florida State is 93, obviously, you know, Charlie Ward, all that happens. Great. Awesome. Cause I was a sixth grader when they won the national title with Winky and all of them, but you know, all that. So yeah, my very first game in person, like to see Florida State in person, was 2013 national championship. Like, it was the first time I ever saw them. And I was at
that's
the
hard
game.
To top.
That's hard to top.
It's been all downhill from there.
All downhill from there. My first game at Doak was a loss. It was the 2017 against Louisville. It was the end of the Jimbo Fisher era. That was my first game in Doak Campbell Stadium. It was terrible. My favorite game, however, where they actually won, was the 2023 Miami game. Yes, we played their backup quarterback, but man, for that being my first in-person Miami game, let me just tell you.
It's just different.
It's just different, man. Yeah. Our fan base was ratchet that day. I mean,
can't tell. I can't talk about my behavior at that game. I led 1-2 FFM chance.
It was a sight to behold. It was so much fun. And then, like, even though Miami, like, wasn't as great because they had their backup quarterback, that game was so close for a long time. And then for Florida State to pull that out in the fourth quarter was so much fun. I was sitting next to a Miami fan who was really kind and gracious, but he was talking a lot of that ish the whole game.
Yep.
So to be able to turn around when we finally scored the touchdown, it was pretty clear we were going to win and really just give it back to him was so much fun. Okay, my favorite game away out of Doak Campbell Stadium, I was going to say the 2023 LSU game in Orlando here. That was great. But I just remembered. I forgot. I went to another game. It was the Jameis Winston 2014 at Louisville. They're down like four scores.
That's one
They're
of the best games
the
ever.
They're fumbling the ball. I'm sitting up top. Louisville fans are screaming and talking every piece of calling Florida State. I mean, it was, you're done for. Jameis is a crap stealing, bad for, I mean, like, I didn't say a word that entire game. I was so nervous in the rain watching them lose this game on national TV, and then they came back. Literally when we scored that touchdown where it was like two scores, it was like completely like it's over. I let out the biggest scream into this Louisville guy's face, letting him know, thank you for talking trash this whole game, because now you're not going to hear the end of it from me. Like the best. Oh, the feeling of that moment was so good. So, yeah,
that's how LSU felt, right, in 2022, because they were like, oh, y'all don't have a chance. We're about to whoop y'all. And, it didn't work out so well for you guys.
It didn't work out for you.
Yeah, that 2014 season, man, I think that took about 5 years off my life.
Yeah.
And every Florida State fan by the end of the day. But that Louisville game was one of the best games probably of that season. It was so back and forth, man. It was a great game. But that's going to do it for this episode, guys. If you have a favorite game in Doak or outside of Doak, let us know in the comments. If you're watching on YouTube, I'd love to hear about you guys' experience. Let us know which of these breakout players, these impact players that we talked about today, that you are excited to see in Garnet Gold in 2025. Hit like and subscribe on the video to help us grow the channel. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noles fans. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. We appreciate you guys. Consider joining if you guys want to become a member of the PTS tribe. Check out our website as well. I've got about four articles in the queue that I'm getting ready to publish, so those will be dropping soon as well. But yeah, we appreciate you guys. Thanks for everything you do, watching this channel, supporting us. We couldn't do it without you guys. We appreciate you, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.